What I am going to present today is a visit to one of the out-of-the-cold church basements where they feed the people a wonderful dinner and let them stay overnight. This is at the Center Presbyterian Church at Charlton and Caroline, and I was really impressed when I saw how nice it is inside.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
It's time to hear the other side of the news.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. But do we even know who plants the seeds? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling fruit.
The other side of the news.
Ignorance grows on the spirit like a tumor. Till freedom is a rumor.
Guests come in, and of course the first thing we do is have tea and coffee. And then we serve soup and buns. And they visit with each. It's a real social thing for the guests.
Are there a lot of regulars?
Yes, yes. Although I'm noticing this year we have many more new people. The sort of faces are quite different. We still have a few members of the. This is our 10th year doing it at this church. And so we still have a few of the original people who came.
So there's people that have been doing this for 10 years at this church.
Yeah. Every church that are doing it.
The new faces, what age group are they?
There's quite a lot of younger people.
Really?
In their 20s, 30s.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And then we have a few people coming in with children.
That's new too?
That's relatively new, yeah.
How long has that been happening?
I've noticed more this year. I've noticed that there are more kids coming in this year. So anyway, then they have soup, and they are so hungry, and they some of them have 3 and 4 bowls of soup. They're really hungry. And then we have cards, and we have books, and they have their friends they visit with, and then at 5:15, we serve dinner. And usually they're gone by 6:30. You know, they eat and go.
How many do you think you can sit? I see you had tables and chairs set up.
We set up for 120.
Is that the average?
We've never had more than that. But at James Street Baptist on a Monday night and a Tuesday night, they've actually had to open up the Ascension Church on a Monday night for the overflow.
Okay.
Once they've reached 100 at James Street Baptist, they send them up to Ascension, and they eat there, and sometimes there are 80 up there.
So where's Ascension?
That's on the corner of Charlton and John. Charlton and John.
So how many do you think stay the night here?
Lately, this year, we've been having an average of, we might leave here and there's 11, 12. When you come in the morning, there might be 20. So people are coming in overnight.
Oh, you let them in later times?
Up until midnight, yeah.
Oh, that's good. So up until midnight, they still have a chance to.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever find where you don't have enough room for them to sleep overnight?
We have never encountered that.
And they sleep in this room. This is the gym, it looks like.
In this room, we have mats, just like hospital bed mattresses. Mm-hmm. We put them on the floor. You can see the blankets out there. They get a pillow with a pillowcase and a sheet, couple of sheets, and a blanket.
Yeah, now, what about a shower? Is there any showers here?
We don't have facilities at this church. They do at James Street Baptist.
So there's no place here for them to clean up?
Well, there's a toilets and they can wash, but we have no shower facility.
Okay, so about 120 people in one washroom, or two washrooms?
Two washrooms, okay. Yeah. It's not the ideal situation.
Well, it's a lovely church. It's the first time I've been inside it. It's quite homey and warm.
We're probably about as roomy as any of the churches that are operating. Do you know about the other churches?
I've just started, so.
Oh, okay. Monday and Tuesday night, it's James Street Baptist. Monday, Sister Caroline does it. Tuesday night, the Jewish community does it at James Street Baptist. Wednesday night, St. Lawrence Parish does it here. Thursday night, we do it here. This is the Presbyterians. Friday night, it's Wentworth Street Baptist. Sanford and Cannon.
So we're all kind of around this area.
Yeah, we try to keep as close to the downtown core because...
Then Friday and Saturday?
And then Saturday and it's Ascension, but Ascension don't have a stayover program. It's just a feeding program.
And the weekend?
And Sunday we don't have any. We're looking for another church for Sunday.
We, meaning the whole group of the Out of the Cold churches?
Okay. What we have is Hamilton Out of the Cold program coalition, and that includes all of us. And then each of us is on, you know, we do it on our own.
And the volunteers for this church, are they mostly from the church?
They're mostly from our church, yeah. And we've had the same core group of people doing it since we began. So we're really lucky. Sometimes it's hard for them to find enough volunteers at some of the other places. So we have an orientation meeting before we start in October most years, and we get students from McMaster and we present the program and hope we get enough people signing up.
I've heard that, well, do you do a breakfast here as well?
We do. For the people who stay over, they have hot breakfast in the morning, and we give them a bag lunch to take away with them.
Okay, so they're set enough for
their
day.
They're pretty, yeah. Except, you know, that they're still wandering the streets.
Well, are some of them working, perhaps, and can't afford?
Some of them are. They have their own apartments, but they just don't have enough money to cover the cost of food. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's real low income.
I've heard that is there a possibility there are people working and coming here for their meals?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. We do have a few of that.
I need to talk to those people because that's a minimum wage issue or a temporary work issue.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Unfortunately, some of the people who come really are taking advantage, and we know that there are a certain number of them. But yes, there are low income people.
Well, I think it's fairly safe to say that it's not a far stretch from somebody that may be even working, is trying to stretch their food budget.
Oh, sure,
The price of what food is now.
Yeah, it's...
And a hydro bill and a phone.
It's really hard
and,
for people, yeah.
And your name is again?
May Wainwright.
Well, this is a beautiful church.
Well, I'm an employee at St. Joseph's Hospital, and we also do the Hamilton Out of the Cold program, which we know the coordinator, Sister Carol Ann. I work here as a security officer, security guard, and I help keep the peace here at the hall, the churches, out of the cold.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this myself for 6 years.
What's the special training that you require as a security guard for this kind of job?
Well, it requires an understanding of the people that come in, and the training that we receive at the hospital helps us immensely with this program, with conflict management, dealing with people, how to resolve issues, stuff like that.
Any first aid?
First aid CPR. Yes, we are trained as first aid CPR at the hospital. If need be, we can use it here. But we're also trained to give a quick response to getting in touch with the proper authorities, such as ambulance or police or fire department, if anything should go wrong.
So you're different in the regard that you're looking for health issues to the deal?
Absolutely. As far as the mental health issues go, I mean...
Hello.
It's a different breed of animal here. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that a lot of these people are mentally challenged or mentally sick by any means. It's just a different mentality. So
well, I would suggest there's a great deal of mental stress living their life.
That is true. Though if they are in dire straits, that they do actually handle it quite well, from what I see.
Hi, Mike.
I don't see any behavioral problems at all.
It happens once in a while. One out of five times, maybe two out of five times I work at the church, something might arise. someone might come in drunk or high. I have to know how to deal with the situation. Exactly. Each situation is different. Like, there could be one person that comes in here that's intoxicated or high or sick, or there could be five at a time that come in. So, I mean, there's different...
And you are by yourself.
Am I by myself? The only time I have help is with either the volunteers or even sometimes the other patients that might help, that want to, you know, help out that...
Do the volunteers that might stay overnight as well?
No, it's through security.
Hi. Hello. My name is Len.
Hi, Len. How are you?
You're saying that if somebody's maybe got even just the flu or a bad...
Or cold, right?
They have to go to the hospital. And
they will come to the hospital, and I will see them there between 3, 4, 5 times a week sometimes.
So they sit and wait for you, said how many hours?
Between 5 and 8 hours for a doctor every day.
Kim?
Hi, Kim.
Kim is
where
is
There's bad news if I ever saw.
The program is where anyone wants to come for a free meal. They have a good people that volunteer all their time and their efforts to produce a good meal. And they also help people that's on the streets. They give them warm blankets, a place to shelter, personal hygiene, breakfast in the mornings. And I think they do a lot of good work here. And
I'm very
pleased. And I'm very pleased with all the efforts and that they achieve here.
How long have you been coming to this one?
I've been coming here every Thursday nights.
For how long?
Close to 4 to 5 years. Yeah, but I come down. I help out sometimes down here.
Are you one of the people that need shelter for the night, or do you have a place to live?
I got my own place, but I come down here because I think the main source is to come down here to get to meet people. And that's the main source of coming to this program, because you get to meet people and show people what God is.
So it's a social situation for you?
It's because it's safe environment.
Safe environment.
Because you come into a church, and conditions are you're safe from people outside that causes problems.
I don't know about the other meal programs in the city, but are they in places that are less than safe that make you feel uncomfortable to go to?
Some places, you go there, there's fights and this and that, but the security that's here, they do a pretty good job to not produce violence, and they just tell the people, when they come in here, if you cause problems, you're not allowed in. It's like there's no weapons, no alcohol, no drugs allowed in here. So it's a safe environment for people to come in.
This Out of the Cold program in all of the Hamilton churches since its inception, probably about 5 years now. I enjoy the companionship, the nutritious food. I live alone. I'm disabled. But I do work sometimes. And it's a great place to just not feel so alone. The food is prepared very lovingly, and it's served with great respect. Sometimes we get the respect here we don't get in other areas of society. Well, we're greeted very warmly. They know our names. They have good boundaries. They don't. It's not like dealing with government where you have to supply everything blood.
What is that like for people that don't have to deal with those kinds of situations?
Well,
I mean, it's really... It must be demoralizing or insulting or the stuff that, you know, we don't normally think about it until it happens to us.
That's right. None of us, I've worked my whole life and then I had a stroke and it slowed me down somewhat. But and then I had to deal with bureaucrats. And here there is no bureaucracy. They live their faith. They treat people the way people expect to be treated. You don't get that in the larger world here.
What about the general population? Do you think that they're treating you marginally or giving you a different attitude?
Yes, I am treated marginally. I have an invisible metabolic disability, and our society, being very materialistic, judges people by, you know, usually it's what's your name and what do you do? And here it doesn't matter. They don't ask those kind of questions.
These people that you're trying to have a conversation with say that maybe are working and haven't experienced a lifestyle like this. When they say, what do? Is it because they really want to know and that's the opener? Do you ever get anybody that really wants to know what it's all about?
I've run into people, had some very profound conversations with them here from their walks of life, where they play chess or they've written a book or they've traveled. And I may not remember their name in weeks future from now, but I'll remember that social interaction. And it never comes down to what you do. It's more the issue, what are your values as a person?
That's excellent. Something that's missing from the part of society that doesn't, say, come to a out-of-the-cold program, that doesn't have a need for this kind of socializing because they work full-time, they're friends with either their neighbor or their people at work. You know, they live in a different world.
Yes, I mean, here I don't have social status, if you look at it anthropologically. So here, I'm my own being, and I'm accepted as my own being.
That's kind of a relief, isn't it?
It is.
And it allows you to be more truly yourself, I would think.
Well, it's I can be my true self. I can be my real self. I can still work on my social skills here, but I don't have to prove anything. No competition.
That's the one thing I noticed when I became disabled. I was forced off the treadmill, and sometimes there's a lot of things that come with that that are not nice. Lack of employment for one, income for another. But the great release of being out of the rat race, that terrible pressure of society, normal society, or what people think normal society is, which we've been conditioned to for the past 20, 30 years, or maybe longer. This routine that we have grown up and automatically assumed the responsibility of without much question, because there wasn't much choice if you wanted to eat and have a place to live.
That's correct. You've summarized it very well. The rat race, the competition, the goal setting, this time of the year, the materialism. You'll see a beautiful tree over there in the corner with angels and stars, and you'll see books that are left for people to borrow, to read. There's not a big pressure for anyone here to feel they have to exchange gifts. So being out of the rat race and off the treadmill has its advantages.
I'm going to guess here that there's a deeper thought process you're now allowed to have, more contemplation on the morals of society that you can entertain now, I would think.
Right now, I'm studying Zen Buddhism. Excellent. So, you know, I plug in my Zen music when I get home, but I can realize my Zen here at these dinners. I didn't have that when I was in the rat race.
How have you found that when it comes to rents, the high cost of rents, the low availabilities of places to live that are affordable in this city?
Well, Hamilton, the stats is 1 in 5, very, you know, below the poverty line. I'm fortunate to live in a geared to income building. So that's, you know, I live alone with a cat.
And with a cat. You're never
with a cat.
With a cat.
Never alone. No, that's right. The people here are from broken homes, or they're disenfranchised one way or another from families. Economically, I've been able to meet my own needs, but I've let go of all of the frills in my life, and I enjoy it. For example, at my table right now, there's one gentleman with a paper. He shared his paper with people. And where are you going to find that on a bus?
It's amazing how much you don't need. When you really find out that you don't have the money to buy it, you go, oh, well, it's a want. We've been stylized or processed to live in a world of wants, and I have a personal theory on that. I think it's a society that is set up by the marketing agenda, by the corporate agenda, because they have products that they have to sell.
Multinational corporations rock the world. And what I find here, I don't know, I lived through the 60s and 70s, and I love the 60s. There was that social awareness, and we're getting back to that now. There is community here. For this program to last that long, there's community.
How much of society have you seen change in the last 10 years?
Probably every niche there is. I see the rich are richer and the poor, the gap between the haves and have-nots.
Is there any middle class anymore?
No.
I think we're getting middle class coming to places like this to get some food. That's what I'm thinking.
That's about it. I mean, people, you'll see the bicycles parked out front. No one came here in a cab or in a car. We walked here, or we took public transit.
Some people choose that lifestyle for a moral basis, but we're in a very different world now in the last 4 or 5 years than we've been in maybe 3 or 5 generations. The talk of the climate change and the global warming and the international marketing of companies, and Our whole social life is flipped upside down. We don't have jobs where we live. We have to go far away to get the job. We have to have a car to get to that job. You're the age that I'm at, so you remember that there was retailers, mom-and-pop stores. You didn't have big malls so much. You had stores individually if you were in a town where you could go and get what you needed. That had this social interaction. This is like a town hall meeting.
That's right.
Or the grocery store that used to be.
Yeah, it doesn't say Walmart out there. Yeah. So we can come in here. We have the town hall. You get a lot of opinions, but we respect diversity here too.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to come to these places is because I hope to get some honest opinions about the reality that the majority of Canadians are facing in this current global society. And to get this kind of dialogue and conversation, you have to go directly to the street and find people that live it daily and have observed it and maybe have felt some of the pain of decisions that they're being shut out of now because the income bracket's gone so high, you can't compete.
That's right.
You have to just stop trying because it's impossible to keep up to. I think the marginalized to begin with have been given a bad deal. Social programs have disappeared. This is not the Canada I grew up knowing.
Same here. I'm from a small town, Ontario, and I'm fortunate to have been university educated, but boy, when you come off that ivory tower and you...
Doesn't mean you get a job.
No.
What kind of jobs do you think people can still get and hang on to? I mean, you can't even count on a job for life now.
No, and the unions are being broken, so if you're going to get a job cleaning somewhere, probably $8.50 an hour, that's keeping you at the poverty level.
Mm-hmm. There's no real ways to solve the problem, is there? There's only a select few that get that big CEO.
The chosen
package.
Few.
Yeah. So what happens to all the regular workers? Middle class society.
Well, if a person's spirit isn't broken, that's the other thing. Some people just give up.
Do you blame them?
No.
I mean,
I see the survivors here. I don't see the seniors I saw last year. There's certain faces, the ladies who serve the soup and the meals ask me, have you seen so-and-so? She made me a dream catcher. Have you seen her? Some people just disappear. No.
So it's pretty difficult to form long-term friendships then.
Yeah. A lot of people here don't have phones. And so... Well, it enhances verbal communication. I mean...
Yeah, if the climate change turns itself into what some people predict, we're all going to have to learn how to do without. And the people that will be on the leading edge teaching us will be the people that have been doing without for a lot of years, I'm thinking.
Well, I was talking to someone about that earlier today, and I was saying, if worse comes to worse, I'm used to living with very little. I live with a cat in a bachelor apartment, no cable vision, no internet, no microwave, a land phone and an answering machine. It's very basic living, but I enjoy it. Now, if people with the big houses and the three-car garage and all their pensions, if they had the bottom fall out of the world, I don't think they could handle it.
I agree with you.
They would sit here crying. Probably it would just... They don't know this side of the world.
No, that's a very important point to bring up. The fear that a lot of people will have of being one or two paychecks away from having to use a service like the Out of the Cold program. The terrible fear of being homeless. I mean, I don't know if you can explain to anybody what that's like so they can get past it. People hear horror stories about some shelters and drug addicts, and there's a lot of fear about not ending up on the street. But... I mean, there's a lot of areas that you can end up that maybe not be so bad. And you got anything you can say for someone who may suddenly find themselves in that position? How can they handle it? Where do they go?
Come to something like this. There are all kinds of people who've been through those experiences. Don't go to the bureaucrats. They'll give you a pamphlet.
Right? I won't tell
come
you
here,
about this place.
Come here, and the people will talk about the system and give you channels, who to contact, when, what, when it's open, and daycare and all that. I found stuff out here. Not from our government.
I keep hearing that constantly. It's word of mouth. No pamphlets. Nobody knows where... Somebody stumbled in here tonight while I was waiting at the door wanting to know if there's something he could pick up and take away with him, because he just heard this word of mouth. Where he heard it, nobody knows. It's like an invisible underground society. Why is that? Why is it that nobody cares enough? Or do have they given up on caring?
We care, but sometimes it's the not in my backyard syndrome here. We don't want to see, just like we don't want to see what's behind those nursing home walls. We don't want to see the elderly. So we're hidden in here. We're in a church. It looks safe to the outside world. Oh, how nice. You know, paternalistic attitude.
I'm glad you brought that up about nursing homes. What happens from here? A lot of these homeless people will end up in an institutionalized nursing home.
With no power of attorney, just no one.
How can we deal with that? How can we not make that a reality for many, many people?
Well, there are other societies. I think in Sweden they've got programs. Other societies handle care of the elderly much different than we do here in North America. We've turned it into a money-making thing. It's the healthcare industry we're talking about.
Yeah, a lot of
so if you have a pension, goodbye. Say you've managed to save $50,000 for your retirement and you end up needing to be put into a nursing home, they will charge you top dollar. I don't want to single out extended care, but you know, places like that, they'll take the money.
$50,000 won't last you very long,
no.
Will it? Then what happens?
Well, hopefully they'll move you from a two-bedroom to a six-bedroom. And I sat, the first time I ever set foot in a place like this, I just sat crying. I couldn't stop crying.
I think that's a natural reaction.
I didn't know what this is what I'd become. Was this what my mother warned me about?
What is this? What did you think you had become?
A loser. I thought I'd lost everything.
Because why? Because you couldn't have a job or keep a job being disabled?
Well, my world was turned upside down.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm still here, right?
How long did it take you to get out of that, come out of that?
A couple of years.
Really?
Get my head around it.
So what was that 2 years like? A rollback going
back? Yeah, it was hell. I was on a lot of medication and just to deal with the stress.
It's been told to me it's like post-traumatic stress.
It is.
Syndrome. Suddenly being homeless after having never been without a home. Must be as traumatic as...
Or picked up and put in another society where you don't speak the language, you don't know the mores, and you don't know the habits and the culture. It is a culture shock.
It is. So, I mean, how did you get by it? Did you get some of the violence you were afraid of, or the ostracization, or did people see your problem and help you?
Not really. I had to deal with it myself. I remember a gentleman... oversized gentleman. There's a no knives, no weapons policy here. They hadn't put that up yet. And one fellow was, he had a very short blade, and I remember being in fear. He was slicing fruit. But when you're in a society like this, your fears
are heightened. Yeah.
Heightened because you think.
Well, you have no idea what to expect because you are in, as you said, a different world. The
you
rules
see
are different.
People with swastikas tattooed on their arm. I mean, I was not ready for this.
People leave you alone?
Pretty much.
So there was a sort of...
I wasn't making eye contact, you know. And then now I may not know people by name, but I certainly have seen the faces for 5 years. So I don't feel afraid.
Do some of your friends end up sleeping overnight? Are some of your friends actually homeless?
Yes, there are people here who have their sleeping bags with them. And they'll be sleeping on the floor here tonight.
Then I need to talk to them to find out what it's like to sleep and to get the honest truth of what it's like.
Well, there you have it. That's one of our first visits with the Out of the Cold program, church basements and halls and gymnasiums, where you'll find many very hardworking volunteers. In fact, one of them told me they start at 8 o'clock in the morning just to make sure that the food is ready and prepared for when they open the doors at 4 o'clock. It really is a hard job, and they do it admirably. I'm going to try and cover all of the Out of the Cold locations this year and hopefully take our listeners along the way with us so that those that aren't living on the streets will get an idea of what life is like on the other side. And these are a couple of the singers from the CAWDB Christmas Party.